Turn your Bible with me tonight, please, to Deuteronomy chapter 32, two passages, Deuteronomy chapter 32 and Isaiah chapter 46. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and Isaiah chapter 46. I want you to listen very carefully tonight. This message will tell you several key things that everyone needs to understand in life. It will give you a key element, if not the key element, to know how to make wise decisions in life. It will also tell you one of the few possible ways to reason with a rebellious teenager or a rebellious young man or young lady. This will also hopefully provide motivation and encouragement for you yourself to not quit. Do you ever get discouraged? Certainly you do. This should help you understand how to not quit. And this will also show the need for us to support young people who make wise decisions. Her name was Jessica. It was the fall of 1993. I was in my office. It was a Wednesday afternoon before church. I was preparing my Wednesday evening message when the telephone rang. Pastor Friend was on the other end of the line. He said, "Brother Davis, I know that you're busy, but could you spare me 5 minutes? I need some advice or wisdom really bad." Then he began to pour the story out. I said, "Sure, brother, I'll listen." And he said, "I've got in my church a 13-year-old young lady from a broken home. The father left the mother and is living with another woman. The divorce has already taken place. The court has granted joint custody and visitation rights. And the girl has gone to her dad's to stay for 2 weeks. She just got back. And there were no controls at dad's house. The girl could go anywhere, do anything, be with anybody, watch anything, listen to anything. And when it came time to go back to mom's house, the girl wanted to stay with dad. Now, of course, the mother sees this as a disaster in the making. She realizes the girl could easily ruin her whole life by staying with dad. The girl's mother wants her daughter to do well. The pastor sees the dangers involved. The mother is desperate. She has taught the girl right. She's done everything she can. She tried to keep her marriage together. They have been faithful in church, a good church with good standards. Now the girl is pushing to live with her dad or pushing to do wrong. And he said, "Brother Davis, what can I say to this girl? I have an appointment with her after church tonight. What can I say to her that might be able to help her to realize what she needs to do?" Now, would you look at Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 29. The great man of God, Moses, whose life has been in three 40-year sections, and really his life's work really began at age 80 when he sees the angel of God in the burning bush. He throws his rod down. It turns into a serpent. He picks it back up. It's no longer his rod. It is now the rod of God. And this man of God then goes into Egypt, challenges Pharaoh, says, "Let my people go." God uses him to send plague after plague after plague after plague upon the land of Egypt, ultimately culminating in the death of all the firstborn of both man and beast all over the land of Egypt. Pharaoh says, "You can leave, go, it's fine, get out. I don't want to see you anymore." And then they cross the Red Sea. Eventually, Pharaoh had chased after them. Pharaoh's whole army is drowned in the Red Sea. Now they've had 40 years of wandering in the wilderness because they didn't obey God and go in when they should have. And now we have a new generation. Moses is reviewing God's law. And before this chapter is done, Moses, the man of God, has gone on himself. God himself buried Moses. And so Moses is, as it were, looking back over his whole life of 120 years. He's right at the end of his life. He's looking over toward the promised land, perhaps, wondering what it's going to be like for the children of Israel. And he has a key word of wisdom in verse 29. Read it with me, would you please? Deuteronomy 32, 29. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. Notice that they were wise, that they would consider this. What is wisdom? Wisdom is in considering the end. I want to ask you the question tonight, how will your story end? One of these days, you will breathe your last breath. One of these days, you will walk your last mile. One of these days, you will make your last trip. One of these days, you will write your last words. One of these days, you will look at life for the very last time, and you will slip into eternity. And the question is, how will your story end? Now, have you noticed that, first of all, life is a series of beginnings and endings? Life is a series of beginnings and endings. There was a time when you were born. There will be, unless Jesus returns and we go in the rapture, there will be a time when you die. In between, there are many beginnings and endings. There are the beginnings of relationships. Sadly, at times, there are the end of relationships. There is the beginning of going to a certain school or starting certain training. Then there is the end of that training. There's the beginning. You remember when you first, I remember the first year I went to school at West End Elementary School. My first grade teacher was Mrs. McGee. She didn't put up with any guff at all. She was in charge. I remember sitting in the class one day, somebody was misbehaving, and that was the day when they still didn't put up with anything, you know. And I heard the spanking taking place out in the hallway. You'd be amazed at how quiet a classroom could get with a whole bunch of first graders sitting in there in rapt attention and no teacher anywhere around. It was amazing. So that was my first year, and then was eventually my last year. I still remember in 1969 graduating from high school. I talked to a young man this week off at Bible college, his first few days at Bible college, and he's probably not thinking about it right now, but I was thinking about it already. That time will eventually come to an end. There's the beginning of a job and the end of a job. The beginning of a ministry, the end of a ministry. The beginning of a church service, the end of a church service. Some people wonder if a sermon is going to end, but if the Lord tarries, is coming, even this sermon will end. The beginning of a book, the end of a book. The beginning of a trip, the end of a trip. The Bible begins with Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. There was a beginning. Contrary to what evolutionists would have us to believe, history had a beginning. History will have an ending. Revelation 22:21 winds it all up. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you all. Amen. There's a beginning, there is an ending. Life is a series of beginnings and endings. This is very important. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 46. Let me show you this. God did not decide the beginning of everything until he had first decided the end of everything. This is amazing to me, an amazing verse. Isaiah chapter 46, verse 9, look at it. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning. Did you know God knew what Revelation was going to read like before Genesis 1:1 was ever written? God already knows what's going to happen to you tomorrow better than you know what is happening to you today. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. Now there's prophecy in that verse. There is determination in that verse, but there is also planning in that verse. God did not wind up his creation and then go off and leave it. A tightly wound clock is not a good analogy of how God has worked in relation to his creation. A man taking a trip is a better illustration of God's creation. Let me tell you what I'm talking about here. For years, it was my joy to travel to South Carolina and visit my dad and my mom. And many times I would make that trip until I finally just pretty well, I didn't need a map, I didn't need anything. I'd just get in the car would sort of drive itself 780 miles all the way to South Carolina. But the first thing I had to decide was always, where was I going? And the place I was going was 103 Shrine Club Road, Gaffney, South Carolina. And now, since that's where I was going, I didn't head toward Wisconsin. That wasn't the right direction. I didn't head toward Iowa. That wasn't the right direction. I didn't head toward Oklahoma. That was not the right direction. I didn't head toward Mississippi. That wasn't the right direction. I headed in a route on a course that would wind me up where, are you getting this? Wind me up where I wanted to go. If I were going somewhere else, I would have taken a different route. But the direction you go when you leave your driveway is determined by the destination. Now that's simple, but it's profound. Listen to me. The direction you go when you leave your driveway is determined by the destination. So I would come to Lincoln, take Route 10 to Interstate 72, take that to Interstate 57, take that to Interstate 74, take that to Interstate 275, to Interstate 75, to Interstate 640, to Interstate 40, to Interstate 26, to Interstate 85, to Highway 11, to Highway 18, to Shrine Club Road, until I pulled right up in front of my mom and dad's house. And the end determined the beginning and everything in between. And there could have been some variations. In fact, while I was telling that, I was thinking of some of the variations I could have taken and did take, sometimes at Louisville, instead of taking 74 on across, I would take 65 down and take 64 over. They were different. But ultimately, the destination determined the route. The goal determined the plan. We read Genesis first. But there is a real sense in which God determined Revelation before he wrote Genesis. Psalm 19:6, his going forth is from the end of the heaven. Ecclesiastes 7:8, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. God's goal in creation was to have a people who would love him and serve him and honor him from their hearts. And that's the reason you read in Revelation chapter 4, verse 11, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things," takes you all the way back to Genesis, "and for thy pleasure they are and were created." And in between Genesis and Revelation, man really made some big mistakes and some big messes, but God's plan and God's goal never changed. So, life is a series of beginnings and ending. God didn't decide the beginning of everything till he first decided the end of everything. Thirdly, the end is the most important thing. Brother Gary Dice preached here a while back. He told a story that really grabbed my attention. He said he, as a young preacher, he was at a church in North Carolina, and there was an old man there who had been a preacher for many years. Brother Dice looked at him and said, "Sir, would you have any advice for a young preacher?" And this older, respected gentleman looked back and said this, "There are not many young men who start young and finish old. It's not how you start, young man, it's how you finish." What a challenging statement. There are not many young men who start young and finish old. It's not how you start, young man. It is how you finish. I said to someone this week in a conversation, I said, I'm 56 years of age now. And I think I still got a few years left in me. I feel like I do. I believe I do. And I am more concerned with every single passing day that somehow or other, by the grace of God, I can finish this course. That I can finish this race. That I can end the story right, because everybody's life is a story. The end is the most important thing. Deuteronomy 8:16 refers to how God fed them in the wilderness, and that he might prove them to do them good at their latter end. The text verse I read to you, Deuteronomy 32:29, oh, that they were wise, that they would consider their latter end. I'm trying to get you to think right now. If you're 20, I'm trying to get you to think of 70 and 80. But that's hard to do. So if you're 20 right now, I'll really try to get you to think of when you're 30. If you're 10, I want you to think about when you're 20. Now, if you're 40 or 50, I want you to think about when you're 70 or 80. I want you to be thinking about that, that they would consider their latter end. Job 42:12. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. Hey, when you read the beginning of the book of Job, that's one thing, but hey, don't stop reading the book of Job till you get to chapter 42. Make sure you read it all. Psalm 37 and 38 says, mark the perfect man, it means the upright man, and behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. But the transgressor shall be destroyed together, the end of the wicked shall be cut off. Proverbs 14:12. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You hear that? Watch me. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man. You can get geographically disoriented. You can also get spiritually disoriented. When I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a couple of weeks ago, I had a problem there. I am always orienting myself to north, south, east, and west. Wherever I am, I've got to know what my directions are. Well, somehow, if I drive somewhere, I can always keep my directions straight. But when I fly sometimes, and they land, and I don't know where the airport is, I get confused. The whole time I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I knew that the mountains, those huge mountains, I knew they were on the east side, and that the church I was at was on the west side. Never could get my mind straightened out. I was always thinking, every time I looked at the mountains, I was thinking that's west. And it would be morning and the sun would be coming up. Now, wait a minute. The sun comes up in the, talk to me, in the east, and it sets in the, and the direction of the sun could be wrong, and I could not make myself believe. I had to keep saying to myself, that's west, that's east. I don't feel that way. Let me tell you something. Too many people follow their feelings in determining the destination points of their lives. Well, I don't feel like this anymore, and this just feels right to me. This feels like something I could do. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man. It feels right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You better not, listen to me. If you got a compass in your hand, you better believe the compass. When I was taking flight training years ago, one of the big things that the flight instructor kept nailing down with me, he said, you look at that heading indicator. You look at that compass. You look at that heading indicator. If it tells you you're going a certain way, you better believe it. And he even said this. He said, there have been people who were flying upside down who would not believe they were, and they started climbing. They thought because they felt like they had to climb. They're flying upside down. If you start climbing when you're flying upside down, you're flying right into the ground. He said, you better learn to believe those instruments. Listen to me, folks. You better learn to believe the instruments. You better learn to look in the book and say, this is what God says, and it really does not matter how I feel. I better listen to what God says. I better do something about that. There's a way which seemeth right unto man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You may feel great about that, but you better stop and ask yourself, where does that come out? And if you don't know, stop and ask somebody. Ask God. Look in God's Word. Ask a wise, godly friend who has lived a little while longer than you have, because one of the advantages of living life is this. By having lived 56 years, and this is just one of those benefits of living long. Almost anybody who's lived a while can do this. They can see where a road comes out. I can look at a young person and tell where they're going to be 10 years from now. I do it all the time. I can see where they're going to be a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And one of the goals of my life, one of the big challenges of my life is to get young people to stop and say, look, where is that coming out? Don't take that road just because you like it. Ask yourself where that road comes out. I've taken roads. I hate to admit this. I'm a man, and wherever you go, I mean, the road's going to turn out right, right? Fellas, you don't need to ask directions, right? You just turn, it's going to come out right, right? I've taken roads like that wound up in the middle of the wilderness and dead-end road, and my sweet wife just sitting over there grinning, you know. And, you know, she's so gracious. She never says, I told you so. She just smiles and says, you know, should we have asked directions or something anyway? Ecclesiastes 7 verse 8, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Romans chapter 6 verse 21 and 22. What fruit had ye then in those things whereof you're now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. There is an end that is death. But now being made free from sin and become servants to God, you have your fruit unto holiness, and the end, everlasting life. Revelation 22:13, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Now, let me tell you something. What the pie is like when you serve it is the most important thing. Any wise cook is thinking all the time she or he is baking a pie, they are picturing a husband, family, friend, maybe even their pastor eating it. They're picturing the smile on the face. They're picturing him with that fork going in there, and they're picturing him, it coming up. Am I making you hungry? I'm trying to. Especially if it's pecan pie, right? And it's coming up to his mouth, and he's, oh, darling. Oh, this is so good. What are we saying? The end of the thing. That means you better decide the end and let that decide the beginning and the path to the end. You taste somebody's pie, and you say, that sure was good. And they say, would you like the recipe? And you say, sure. Wait a minute. Why do you want the recipe? Why not trial and error? Why not do what that youth pastor did one night who was trying to motivate the parents in his youth group to do a better job of parenting and to think about where their kids were going? He planned an evening to meet with the parents at the church. The fathers and mother came, were sitting, talking, laughing, fellowshipping. He called the meeting order and said, while we're meeting tonight, we want to bake a cake. Fathers, help me with the ingredients. Men, what do you think we need to bake a cake? They all sat and looked at him. He persisted. Finally, one man said, some flour. How much? 6 cups. Eggs, how many? 8. Baking soda, how much? Somebody said 1/4 cup. shortening. How much? Somebody said one cup. Them mamas are sitting there, those wives. Can you imagine their eyes about this time? How much sugar? Somebody said sugar. How much? 3 cups. How much salt? Somebody said 1 teaspoon. How much? We need some vanilla, somebody said. He said, how much? He said, he's pouring it in. 2 tablespoons. Somebody said, we need some milk in that. He said, how much? They said, about 1/2 gallon. He poured 1/2 gallon in. He said, fine, let's take it back and cook it. And when they brought it out, he, at the end of the meeting, he brought it out. How long do we cook it? About 45 minutes. Okay. He brought it out about 45 minutes later. He started cutting it, passing it out. A couple of guys. You know what a lot of people do that with their lives? And that's what he was trying to say. He was trying to say, but fathers, you don't want to raise children like that. You don't have time for trial and error. You better get a time-tested recipe, this book, and do what God says. You see, with the recipe, you can start at the end, then go back to the beginning, and then head back to the end. You know, if it looks good, tastes good, and is good for you at the end, it really doesn't matter what it looked like at the beginning. Do you hear that? I've seen people cooking, and, you know, I watch them throw all that stuff in, and it's like, ha, ha. But I've lived long enough now that I've seen what can come out of the oven at the end. And so I say, just go right ahead. If it's a good cook like my wife, and they just throw all they want. Yeah, just throw it in and dab here and a little there. I don't question it because I know when it comes out, it's finger licking good. Lip smacking good. Your tongue wags so much chewing it, it just about slap your brains into oblivion. You say, that was good. Hey, who cares what it looks like? Too many people are like right now, well, I got to impress the world. Oh, forget what the world thinks. Just do what God says. You come out right, it'll taste good at the end. And somebody, I talked to a family in our church a number of years ago with several children, children all doing well. The grandparents didn't understand. You're going to church all the time. You're not going to these places. You're not doing these things. You're not doing that. You're doing this. You're doing this. And the grandparents said, well, why don't you let them go here? Why don't you let them watch this? Why don't you let them play this? Why don't you let them do that? And the parents came to me and said, what do we say? And I said, do not expect them to understand till your children have children. Once your children are grown, marry right, doing well, then they will understand. You wouldn't believe how many times I've given that counsel to somebody. I gave that counsel to somebody in our church a number of years ago. That family that I'm talking about right now came back later and said to me, Pastor, you were right. Grandma and Grandpa understand now. It's all right. It's good. I gave that counsel to another family in our church who came to me a little while back. And they were not following the world's boyfriend-girlfriend game. And the grandparents really didn't get it. And they really didn't follow it. And then they found the one that was God's choice for their daughter's life. They went to Grandma and Grandpa's house. And they sat down and showed them one of my videos. They said to me, how do we explain this to Grandma and Grandpa? What's happening here? Our daughter's never dated. What do we do? And they went into Grandma and Grandpa's house and took one of my, I said, take one of my videos, just play it. When you get done, then say, our daughter is doing this. And when they got done, Grandma and Grandpa looked at them and listened, and then they said, you know, we've watched you all these years. We didn't understand it at first, but before we got a third of the way through the video, we knew what you were going to tell us. And we're thrilled and we thank God for what's happened. When you get to the end of a story, is when, listen, a number of years ago now, what was it? I don't know, 12 years ago or something. Dr. Paul Levine, one of the giants of that I've known in my life, one of the greatest men of God I've ever known, stood right here and told his life story at 80 years of age. He was just a year or less from his home going, And we listened and heard what he had to say. We listened to the beginning. We listened to all of that in between. And the reason we listened and enjoyed was because we could see the end and it looked so good. We could see his sweet spirit. We could see that he was close to the end, that he was going to finish well, and that God had blessed him. And brings me to my fourth thought, the focus. I've already said this, got to say it clear. The focus of life should always be on the end. Wisdom is always looking forward to the end, always trying to peer into the future. Moses said, oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. One of the simplest, wisest things to know when you counsel family and friends is this. A right decision is never a problem to look at long range. In fact, the further you go down the road marked right, the better it looks. Joseph in Genesis started out a slave. He ended up a sovereign. In John chapter 2, Jesus saved the best wine till the last. Foolish people live just for the present. Consider the end of your trials and you won't be so discouraged. That's the reason we have the book of Job and the story of Joseph and the appeal of Esther before the king, so we can see the beginning and the end of a trial. I love this next story. When we were in Texas before we came to Illinois, this was 1974, I believe it was. There was a lady in the church there who made the most delicious, odoriferous, lip-smacking good, melt-in-your-mouth, want-some-more Mississippi mud cake you have ever had in your life. It wasn't good. It was fantastic. I can't eat chocolate anymore, so I don't let my wife make it anymore because I couldn't stand it. But I loved it. This lady would bring it to potlucks. And people, I mean, it'd be the first, everybody would watch for her Mississippi mud cake. You know what I'm talking about? That chocolate and that marshmallow and that, those nuts on top of that and whatever else is in that, that just made it so good. Am I making y'all hungry? I keep trying. And one of the boys over here said, yeah, you're making me hungry. That lady would never share her recipe with anybody. And my wife knew that, but she wanted the recipe. So she figured out a way she could get it. Now, y'all can't imagine my wife doing this, but she did. She and this lady were in a conversation one day, and they were talking about cooking and recipe. Just general conversation. The Mississippi mud cake is nowhere in the conversation. Just general conversation between some ladies. My wife said to her, you know, there are people who just won't share their recipes with anyone. Are you like that? She said, oh, no, I'm not. My wife said, well, I'm not either. I think if it's good, you'd want to share it. She said, I feel exactly the same way. My wife said, good. Would you mind sharing your Mississippi mud cake recipe with me? And the lady looked at her and she realized she was had. She said, sure. And she did. My wife got it. I had good Mississippi mud cake for years, thank God. Listen to me, God has not hidden his recipes. That they don't, listen, of course God doesn't die, but what I started to say is they won't die. They haven't died with him. They won't die. He hasn't died. They won't die. His word is eternal. It's an open book. Read it. It's there. His recipes will tell you how to live life if you listen. Every recipe you will ever need to live life is found in this book. And in many cases, those recipes are being lived out in the lives of godly people in the church all around you. That's one reason for the church. Too many people are aimlessly living life. Couples are aimlessly trying to have a good marriage. Parents are aimlessly trying to raise good children. Wives are aimlessly trying to be good wives. Husbands are aimlessly trying to be good husbands. No, you go to the end. You see a happy, successful, godly wife and you learn from her. That's what Titus chapter 2 verse 3 through 5 talks about when it says the older women teach the younger women to love their husbands. Why do they need to learn? Because so many of us men are so hard to love. That's why. Can I get an amen from the men? Thank you, fellas, for being honest. Teach the women to do that, to be sober, to love the husbands, to love their children. Hey, sometimes it's a little difficult even to love children. Yeah. And it says to be discreet, chaste keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husband, that the word of God be not blasphemed. A happy, godly, successful home has a husband. Listen to me, I'm going to give you some ingredients. You can put this together. You can come out with a happy home. Has a husband who is a spiritual leader and a wife who is graciously eager to follow. They're truly committed to stay together till death does part them, no matter what. He praises her, he supports her, he encourages her, he loves her, he sacrifices for her, he respects her, he honors and encourages her. He doesn't use his tongue to put her down. She doesn't use her tongue to nag him. She reverences him, praises him, honors him. He guards his mind against lust. She guards her behavior and dress against lasciviousness. He listens with his eyes and ears and heart when she talks, and she listens with her eyes and ears and heart when he talks. They each seek to meet the needs of their partner when they're alone together, and they have a natural desire for children. They speak and act with kind words and kind actions toward each other. I'm giving you a portion of a recipe for a happy home. Now what you need to do is find somebody living out these truths in their lives and follow them. Psalm 37:37, mark the perfect man and behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. So you mark him and then you watch his life. The Apostle Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. So you think about the end of your marriage. You think about the end of your child rearing. You do the same thing with your parenting. I heard a preacher on tape. He made this statement. I thought, boy, that's a wise statement. He said, I'm not raising children. I'm raising adults. Listen to that. That's phenomenal. I am not going to listen to the philosophy that says, well, when they reach a certain age, they'll settle down. He says, I've seen too many adults who are children who have never settled down yet. You want to look at the end of your child rearing. You want to do that in your parenting. You want to do that in your ministry. You want to do that on your job. You want to do that, the same thing in choosing a church. There is no perfect church. But what is the product of those who follow the teachings and the standards of the church? I do not understand folks who choose a church that doesn't reinforce their beliefs and standards, but they just like the atmosphere. That doesn't make any sense at all. This church's ministries are designed and planned with an end product in view. And we'd love to reach everybody we can, and we try to have acceptance for everybody wherever they're at. But I want to tell you, we're building on this book, not on some contemporary philosophy that just says do anything. Our end product is not to glorify man. Our end product is to glorify God. Therefore, the music, the preaching, the teaching is all with that in mind, that we want to glorify God and then let Him work in the lives of people to produce an end product that truly does glorify Him. I'm talking about see that end product and find it in somebody's life and then follow it and let God do through your life what He wants to. Picture yourself with grown, wise, godly children who are making an impact for God and are raising children like that of their own. Psalm 127:4, as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. And so he says, I want a bunch of children that I can guide to go in the way of God. Now watch me, folks. Listen to me. If you're driving from here to South Carolina and you take a wrong turn, which anybody can do, you either look to see how you can get back on the main route or you turn around and go back. Did you hear me? If you've got a child who is off the main route, then you've got to figure out what you can do to get back on the main route, or you've got to get them to turn around and go back to where they left so they... Are y'all getting this? You don't just give up. You don't just wring your hands and say, I've done what I can do. No, 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 no. When that man was making those arrows, and he made them, happy as the man that hath his quiver full of these arrows, he didn't go down to some discount store and buy some arrows. He chose the wood. He sat for hours. He carefully carved, balanced, tipped, feathered that arrow, thinking all the while about when he would put that arrow in its bow and loose it, and the victory that the arrow would produce. And that's what you want to do. You don't get sidetracked. You don't get discouraged. You keep your eyes on the goal. You think of the end of your marriage. You think of the end of your child rearing. You think of the end of your youth. And that's the reason Ecclesiastes 12:1 says, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. I got a grandson sitting here who's about to be 14. Did you hear that? I'm about to have a grandson who is 14. I got another one back there about to be 14 in a few months. And you know what? Before you know it, you're going to be 20. Before you know it, you're going to be 30. You don't just think about where you are now. You think, where am I going to wind up? If I stay just like I am right now, if I stay on the path of life, if I stay on the road where I am right now, where is this road going to lead me? And when mom and dad see you, young person or child, and says, now, wait a minute, I don't like this. This has got to, you know what I've discovered? Somebody made this comment to me today. They said to me, you know, parents usually get in their children what they really insist on getting. You look around you in this room tonight, and I could testify to that over and over and over again. Certain parents will cue in on this, and they will not let the child get by with anything else, and that child becomes that. And certain parents will cue in on this, and father and mother, if you say, you know what? I am not giving up. Do not give up. Do not give up. Listen to me. If the cake is not done, leave it in the oven a little longer. Don't just take it out and throw it out the back door. Don't say, no, there's nothing else I can do. Until it's ready to eat, keep working on it if you need to. Remember now thy creator in the days of thy young people sitting here tonight, listen to me. Stop and look and say, where do I really want to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now? And then let me ask you the question. Most everybody I know that you'll talk to about that, they'll say, you know what? All right, I'm talking to somebody 15 to 20 years of age. They'll say, well, I'd like to have a good marriage, good home, good children, happy, maybe a good job. How are you going to get that? You're going to have the right recipe. You're going to have to do these things I'm talking about. So you consider the end of your youth and make sure you're going the direction that you need to go. Let me throw this in right here as well. Consider the end of your sin. Now, don't, you know, the world has this philosophy, you know, live fast, die young, have a good-looking corpse. That's not much of a philosophy, is it? You know, just live any way you want to, just have a blast in life. And no, I want to tell you something, the wages of sin is death. And there's a way which seemeth right unto men, the end of the ways of death. Proverbs 23 says, at the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. The beginning of your sin you may think to be the best thing ever happened to you, but the end of your sin could be the biggest nightmare you've ever dreamed of. Man, you sit in my office and you hear some of the stories that I've heard over the years of broken homes, broken lives, broken relationships, people fooling with drugs and alcohol and all these other things that are all around us. I remember talking to, hearing the testimony of a young lady who was the daughter of a godly father and mother, and she became rebellious, and then she left home, and then she started living with a guy, and then she married this guy, and she was separated from her family for 8 years, and her testimony was this: I have suffered for 8 years. I have suffered terribly, worse than I ever dreamed it could happen to me. The Bible warns us in Proverbs chapter 5 to watch out for the strange woman. Fellas, watch out for the strange woman. Who is the strange woman? Before or after marriage, it is any woman who is not the woman God has for your life. That's a strange woman. And the Bible says her end is bitter as wormwood. That's a deadly poisonous plant. Remove from her lest thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. Consider the end of your sin. Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit because they didn't consider the end. Cain murdered Abel because he didn't consider the end. Abraham went down into Egypt because he didn't consider the end. Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery because they didn't consider the end of the story. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram rebelled against Moses because they didn't consider the end. Moses struck the rock because he didn't consider the end. Achan stole the garment and the gold from Jericho because he didn't think of the end. Abimelech established himself as king by murdering all his brothers, his own brothers, almost every one of them, because he didn't consider the end. Samson played the boyfriend-girlfriend game, wound up with his head in the lap of Delilah, and then blinded and grinding, and then a suicide underneath the temple of his enemies because he didn't consider the end. Saul rebelled against the word of the Lord because he didn't consider the end. David committed adultery with Bathsheba because he didn't consider the end. Jezebel had Naboth put to death because she didn't consider the end. Ahab coveted after and took Naboth's vineyard because he didn't consider the end. The children of Israel over and over fell into idol worship because they didn't consider the end. Judas betrayed Jesus because he didn't consider the end. I'm saying to you, life is a series of beginnings and endings. God didn't decide the beginning till he first decided the end. The end is the most important thing. The focus of life should be on the end. You need discretion to properly reach the end. Discretion is needed to get properly to the end. You know what discretion is? It is the ability to choose wisely. It is thinking before you act. It is avoiding actions, words, or attitudes that could produce consequences that you don't want. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 4 says the book of Proverbs is written to give to the young man knowledge and discretion. That's the reason that you need your young people to be feeding regularly on the book of Proverbs, because that book in particular is the one that gives discretion so that they can make the right choices. Immerse them in that book. Proverbs chapter 2 verse 11 says, discretion shall preserve thee. Psalm chapter 112 verse 5 says, a good man will guide his affairs with discretion. Two construction workers sat down to have their lunch. One opened his lunch box and began to scream, "Bologna again. I can't believe it. I hate bologna. Fourth time this week I've had bologna. I can't stand bologna." His friend tried to settle him down. "Take it easy. Won't you just tell your wife you don't like bologna? Ask her to fix something else." "Wife," the guy said, "I make my own lunches." You get the message? For most of us, the bologna in our lives is not put there by somebody else. It's put there by our own selves. And to choose, the Bible pictures that to choose to live without discretion, picture this with me, would you please, is like choosing to live in a swine's snout. Picture a big, ugly, messy, filthy, smelly, dirty hog in a hog pen of mud and slop. Proverbs 11:22 says, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. And so, young ladies, when you say, hey, he is so cute, and you just follow your inclinations, and there's really no godly reason to be with him, the Bible says, because of your lack of discretion, your lack of choosing wisely, you are putting yourself, you are a jewel of gold, and you're putting yourself in that swine's snout. I see these lovely ladies sometime, and they're walking along with this guy that, And I think, does she not realize that God made her special, and she doesn't have to be it with that swine's snout? Exercise discretion in the job you take, the ministry you take, the way you train your children. My preacher friend had called and said, this young lady has been with her father for 2 weeks. He's let her go anywhere, do anything. What can I do? She wants to go live with him now. All the rules are off. Her life will be a mess. They're going to talk to me after church. I get one shot, Brother Davis. What do I do? And I said to him, you have only one chance. And that is, sit down with that girl. She was 13. Try your best to take her 10 years down the road of life. And ask her, will you be more happy then by staying with Dad and doing anything with no restraints, or staying with Mom and having some restraints on your life? And I said, incidentally, brother, by now that mother is considering loosening up and letting that daughter do what she wants. That's my guess. And if she does, the daughter will lose respect for her. After church that night, the pastor sat down and talked to the girl, and the girl wept. She showed discretion. She said, I know you're right. It was just such a great temptation. Refuse to become sidetracked or discouraged on your way to the end. You see, there's going to be opportunities at some point to get you off the track. You better watch out. I continue the story. The young lady, 2 years later, was 15 years of age, came to the pastor at church, 2 years later now, came to the pastor and said, I just want to thank you for what you said to me. I haven't forgotten. I'm trying to keep my eyes on the goal. He said, Brother Davis, she goes soul winning every week. She brought two girls to church last week, and one of them got saved. She's doing great. In fact, she's doing better than her mother, who now has started dating a lost man. That was the fall of 1995, and in the spring of 1998, she said to her pastor, I'm still looking ahead. I'm keeping my eyes on the end. And then, last, realize how quickly the end will be here. I said to somebody this afternoon, I said, you realize, I think he's 30, 35 years of age. I said, you realize how quickly you're going to be my age. It just doesn't seem like any time since I was being called baby pastor. Serious. I had a preacher friend in the Caribbean, and it wasn't a term, it wasn't a derogatory term. He was a senior man, and Brother William Connor used to say, baby pastor, you're such a blessing to me. It hadn't been any time since people were saying, you know, you're just a young man. You got your whole life ahead of you. Thank God. And I'm 56 now. Don't groan. Don't say wow. Don't say anything. I think I got a lot of years to go. But I want to tell you, life goes by quickly. James 4:14, know you not what shall be, what you know what your not what your life shall be. It is but a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. You ever look at family pictures? Look, there he is the day he was born. Look, oh, he was so cute. There you were as a little boy. There you are as a young man. A man. Middle-aged man. Old man. Good night. After my mother died last year, I sat down and created a compilation. I put from her time as a baby, then as a, what was she, 10 years of age, I think, and as a teenager, then as a young lady, then married, then with children, middle-aged, old age, and right before she died. And I put all those pictures on one slide. And you could see her whole life flash just like that. You really don't realize how quickly your life can be gone. And unless you are planning now for the end of your life, then you will not be what you ought to be today. Somebody here tonight needs to stop and think about the end of their life. I was saved as a little boy. You know one reason I got saved as a little boy? Because I thought about the end. I'd heard them preach about heaven and hell, and I said, you know what? I don't know when the end is going to be. Therefore, I better get saved now before it is too late. You think about the end, and unless you're a fool, that thought will put you on the path that you ought to go. For somebody, it may put you on a new path, a new road with a new path, a new Lord. If you're not serving Jesus, you need to serve Him. He's wonderful. He will make your life what it ought to be. Remember what Moses said? Before the chapter was over, Moses was in eternity, standing on the brink of the end of his life. He said, oh, that they were wise, that they would consider their latter end. I wind up with this question. If you continue on the path you're on right now, where will you be 1 year from now? 5 years from now? 10 years from now? 20 years from now? 30 years from now? 40 years from now? Where will this path lead you if you follow it to the end of your life? Would you bow with me, please? With every head bowed.